more happy. Amen.
Amen. Did everybody get a handout? Go ahead, they're on the table. Help yourself to a handout, because I'm just going to kind of follow through this, and if you need to make any extra notes on it, or you are welcome to do that. That'll be great. I have titled our talk today, Create, Communicate, Connect, A Journey in Parenting Special Needs Children. You know, God created a world to communicate with that world, and He sent Jesus. He is the conduit that connects us with heaven. And so Create, Communicate, Connect has been the theme of what I do with my guys, with their art, with how I share with people. It's all about creating an idea, communicating it so that we can connect with people. It's all about God's love, and God is incredibly loving. So when I think of disability, and the kind of disability that we encounter, there are so many different kinds of disabilities. I have two sons with autism, and that's my world in disability. I know a lot about autism. But there are so many diverse ways in which our children need some special attention. In mental health, in physical disability, there are so many different things. Down syndrome, adults with schizophrenia start out as children with some unusual challenges. And I didn't come with a list of names, but when you come to understand disability, it's diverse, and it seems to be increasing. There just seems to be more children with challenges. Now, just before I go on any further, can you all hear me as we've kind of spread out a little further? Is this comfortable? Because, excellent. I used to walk around my guys and look at the unusual things that they do, and I would just look at it and I'd say, it is what it is. You just look at something different, and I just couldn't think of anything else to say about it. It is what it is. And one day, in reading the Bible, I came up with the answer for it is what it is. And it's Proverbs 18:10. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run into it and are safe. So for whatever I was looking at that I thought I couldn't explain, I couldn't understand, I couldn't make sense of it, I would look at it and say it is what it is. But the Lord has an answer for whatever it is with the children, with our children, with the people that we know, people that we come in contact with, who are negotiating life differently because they have a disability. So here's my story. A young mom, we're starting out life together, and 2 years into our marriage, we had our first child, Ben. And I was so excited to be a mom. I brought home this beautiful baby boy, and he was perfect. You know, just the package. And I looked at this beautiful child, and I said, to me, it was just like a blank page with a story yet to be written. And I had so many hopes and anticipations, soccer balls and baseball games and Sabbath school and the kids' church. I just had all kinds of ideas of what my life was going to be like with this child growing up. And for me, the window for normal, or what looked like a normal child growing up, was very small. When people get diagnosed with a disability, it can come at birth and you see that there is going to be a problem, and right away you start to deal with it. But I had this small window of time where things were normal, and then I noticed things were different, and they weren't normal. They were really, really different. Ben just never engage socially and interactive play with me. He wouldn't make eye contact. He did so many things right on time. He found his fist, he rolled over, he stood, he crawled, he walked at 13 months. Pretty normal. But there was this whole piece that just wasn't there. So the first thing, as I'm thinking things are going to be different here, but I'm going to go to my doctor. He's going to reassure me and tell me that everything is going to be okay, and I'm just, you know, thinking too much about things. But he held up two blocks, banged them together, and gave them to Ben, and waited for Ben to do the same. And Ben dropped one block and put the other one in his mouth. And he went, "I think I'm going to send you to the Glenrose." And that began a process. My world began to spin because things were just all of a sudden happening kind of quickly, but not like I was expecting them. And you sit in front of professionals who are assessing and diagnosing and looking at things from different angles, and then they say, "Well, we are seeing things that are going to be different." And a doctor on, you know, those beds that they have with the paper that they keep pulling the fresh paper over, he took out his pen and he said, "A normal child develops like this," and he made a curve with a straight line that went up, and they learn things and they develop. "Your child is going to go like this," and then he drew a flat line. I will never forget that moment. I didn't know what I was hearing, I didn't know what I was seeing, I didn't know what he meant. However, having seen that, I will say that even for children as they grow, lifelong learning is for all of us. It's even for special needs children. And even though Ben's ceiling didn't get really high, he's still learning new things and having new experiences, and I'm going to tell you a little bit more about that later. So while I was wrestling with all of this, for me spiritually what was happening was I was looking at this situation and going, "Why me? What did I do wrong? What sin must I have committed that would have allowed this to happen in my life? I must have done something wrong." And I began to think of everything that I could confess or say, and if I confessed it and said it to the Lord, maybe it would go away. But it didn't go away, and it didn't change. And we were having a group Bible study in our home on the book of John. We got to chapter 9, and there was my spiritual answer. Jesus is walking with the disciples along a road, and the disciples look over and see a man born blind sitting on the side of the road. And they say to Jesus, "Who sinned that this man was born blind?" Because that was exactly my thought. It is a result of sin, but I was taking it very, very personally. And he said, "Neither. This happened so that the works of God could be made manifest in his life." Jesus healed that man from his blindness that day, and it was amazing. And so all of a sudden, I saw a purpose in myself, and I saw a purpose for Ben, and later for Grant, who also has autism, and I have two children only, and both of them are affected profoundly with a disability. They have a purpose. Whatever small skills they have a purpose, and it's God's purpose for them. And so when, as a parent, you have to deal with something big like this, a big disappointment, you go through a grieving process. But you come out the other end of the process with acceptance. And following acceptance, you begin to embrace it, because this is yours. It's where you are. There is this cute little saying that says, "Grow where you're planted." But I always saw as it before me, there was a row for me to hoe. This was my row to work, and I was going to stay in it, because there were other people beside me who had other rows to hoe, and in their row were other difficulties and challenges in life. It may not have been a special needs child, but it was still other challenges in life that they had to face and work through. And it doesn't matter what the challenge is, the knot in the stomach is the same. It feels the same. So we're really all kind of going through these challenges with kind of the same row. We're all kind of in the same boat. And the promise is that whatever it is, God is there beside you to help you through, not necessarily to take it away, but to walk with you for His purpose. Even though I don't fully understand it, I can accept it. And I can count it all joy.
Amen.
And it's important to do that because the Lord never said that our life would be without challenges, but when you have a challenge, to face it with that joy. James 1:2-5, count it all joy, because it's just a process and you just need to grow where you're planted. And so for me, that was the beginning of my journey. What I didn't expect as a parent was to have to be such a big advocate for my children. Children grow. They learn to talk. They learn to express themselves. They learn to ask for things and they learn to do things. My children do not speak. And so advocacy for people who have a disability is really important. I can tell you the day that I realized it. I can tell you what I was wearing. I can tell you where I was sitting, in a very uncomfortable chair, too small for me, in a classroom where there were other parents gathered. I can tell you that I didn't want to be there because it was a beautiful May spring day and I needed to plant my flowers in the garden because that's what, you know, was normal. And but I was in this parent meeting and all of a sudden I realized that I was going to need to be a voice for my children. We need to be a voice for people who have a disability because their needs need to be met. And we have the eyes to see more clearly than they do. And sometimes in disability, for me, considering things are different, mine are nonverbal, and so discovering their needs is a process. But for even for those that are, who can express their needs, they still need a sounding board to share, somebody to work through things with them and to step it out so that they can achieve goals and have success. So advocacy is really important. So where do you start from the beginning when you see a child who is not following the pattern of normal children? You see that something is different and you don't know where to begin. The first place to begin is really with a trip to a pediatrician's office. You really need to start with a doctor, and you need to take, before you go, you need to be well planned, because you can't sit in front of another professional and say, this is beyond me, I don't know what I'm doing, I see something before me, and put your arms up. You have to go to a professional planned. So you need to be able to describe to professionals what you see, what you've experienced with this child, with this person. And you can be diagnosing people not just as children, but a friend of mine has recently diagnosed her daughter at the age of 18. I know of adults who all of a sudden get a diagnosis as an adult, and all of a sudden it explains their childhood. So you can have a diagnosis and you can look for that kind of support and professional help at any age, but most often it's caught as children. So you as the parent need to come to this pediatrician, a physician meeting, listing out the things that you have observed in your child. And I would have the paper in hand, and I would also have questions ready to go. This, if you see this meeting with a doctor as a business meeting, where you hold the agenda, and the meeting is really finished when you have got through all your agenda points, doctors will take the time. But if you're not organized, then the appointment ends and you've gone home and you haven't had your questions answered and you don't know what your next steps are. That pediatrician's office is your window to help, because they would be able to send you on for further assessments. Assessments will lead you into programs or places where you can get support and help for your child. So it begins with a doctor's visit. I used to treat these like business meetings. I would get dressed like I am going to a business meeting. I did not go to a doctor's appointment not looking myself professional, you know, well-groomed. And all of a sudden, the doctor started using terms I didn't understand, and I had to ask questions because they were treating me like a professional as well. They were treating me with respect as a person who knew what I was talking about and was a person who needed help for my child. So in advocacy, anybody have a question about that so far? Because the word group is small, we can ask questions along the way. Please do. If you have a question, I'd be happy to entertain it. Just let me know. When it comes to this piece of advocacy and asking and making plans for what you see is going to be best for your loved one with a disability, you start approaching things where you need to make decisions on programming and schooling and where they're going to hang out and places that they're going to do. A real key thing that a couple who are parenting special needs children need to sit down and talk about their values, because from your values, you make decisions. For example, for us, way back when our children were quite small, there were lots of choices in education. You could have a segregated site for education. You know, all the students in that classroom would have a special needs. They would have a teacher, a couple aides in the classroom, and that was one of your choices. But I really wanted, because I valued the relationship and inclusion, I advocated for my children to be included in the local school. They spent a couple of years at Coralwood, but you have to know that now our schools in Adventist education are much more welcoming, much more open. They have way more information and knowledge, and perhaps it would have worked over a longer period of time, but then they didn't have the resources. I was like a pioneer, knocking on doors and getting people to open up opportunities for Ben and Grant. So inclusion was important. And so because Terry and I valued inclusion, that's the kind of program that we chose for our children. So you need to think about what are your values in terms of what do you see as a good quality of life? And your spirituality comes into it. What do you wish to expose your children to? You are going to choose that based on your values. So it's very good to take some time to discuss that as a family and to see where it is you want, how you're going to make your choices based on your values.
I also believe belief is also based on what kind of belief you have. Your child can do it. Not that they look at it, you know, they're handicapped and they can't do this and they can't do that. You need to encourage them, you need to believe that they can do certain things.
And so what you're talking about is the hope and the exploration and the trying new things. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute. That's a very great point.
Well, and,
I'm just saying things have not very much changed. Our child, who is 9, has not been able to be put into that Adventist school.
Maybe it's people from the resource barn.
He was, he had an aide who was willing to work for what an Adventist school would pay. We had our own therapist that we were willing to involve in the school, since the school district is, the therapy is limited. But no, College Heights is something Adventist school can't take.
Woodlands is actually teaching
special needs kids.
Special needs boy this coming year, you know, and for me, like, it's like, I don't have a handicapped child, but I'm so strongly believing in the whole, in our school system, including these kids. Like our this one child, he was actually refused last year, and so I actually made a call to the church board chair. I'd never ever done that before, right? But I'm just telling him that I disagreed with him not being accepted, but he's accepted this year into kindergarten. And I think myself, I just believe strongly that we just can't, we may kind of, you know, and hit a bit of a brick wall at the beginning, but
I don't know, I just, personally, I wouldn't have my child. I would be, I'm such a strong advocate of our Christian schools and such a strong believer of them that to me, we should be at the forefront of having these kids in our schools. And that just kind of comes back to a comment I was going to make a couple of minutes ago, was just that these kids are to be a blessing to society. That's, I believe strongly that God has given these kids as a real blessing, and our children in our Christian schools are being denied that blessing. And the other side of the coin.
The children who cuddle with my son on the couch and who hug him and who come and tell me what he's doing are not a single one of them an Adventist.
Mm.
And we go to church and none of the children talk to him.
Yes, I understand. That's been my experience too.
We would agree with your choice. I mean, your choice of integration is a choice that the law would make. And at that point, your choice is you have to choose what school will do that.
So. Yes. And so I had to make the same choice because we couldn't stay. Ben had 2 years at Coralwood, and we couldn't stay. There were some financial things, and it was a different age. When I can just share the advocacy that we do for funding, and see that that might help.
Yeah, well, see, the funding wasn't the issue.
Yeah.
We didn't want to deal with the difficulty.
Wow.
Yeah. And
like
that's just so wrong.
His full-time aide that worked for the Westport Respite was willing to work for the small percentage the government would pay her to work at a private school.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just. But I think it's changing, though. You know, I think it's changing. And
Coralwood has some students with special needs, but they are higher functioning than Ben and Grant. They're verbal and unique and can't follow curriculum, so they are making adjustments for that. But I think you need to keep talking, and that would be my advice. So. Vision, and when you present your plan and your hope and your dream for inclusive education in a Adventist situation, if you can send the paperwork on ahead with a vision, allow them some time to look at it and perhaps see possibility in it, and then arrange a meeting and do it again. And then
three different years, they work in there. But we need to encourage the Adventist educational system to learn what they need to do to work with these children. So other people can have that option. So.
Well, there's like the Christian Reform has an entire program. They will do it free for any school administrator, not just Christian Reform, any Christian school in North America. They have entire programs all ready to go. They'll come in and help you set up your school. There's the Catholic schools are committed to 100% inclusion. They're working on doing that, getting that right now.
I know that Coralwood is taking in a Down syndrome child into a classroom that will require an aide. So it's going to grow.
What it is it's kind of on an individual school basis. We have no centralized, push for it within the education of our teachers, within the development of our classrooms.
Doesn't
our schools.
What role does Tracy Jamison play? Like, is she not supposed to be an advocate? Roman, you might know a bit more about that, but. My understanding is that Tracy Jamison's supposed to be.
Do you know?
I've spoken to her regularly. She's a classmate of mine.
Okay.
And she always tells me, I'm preaching to the choir whenever I tell her things, but she has absolutely no ability to make people do anything either.
Can you just become annoying and keep presenting your case in little bites that are manageable? So, you know.
The amount of annoying one can actually be, that takes.
And
I have to be annoying with the government all of the time, trying to keep FSCD funding for his therapists.
Yeah.
So
that's the whole. Yes, I know. Times two for me.
You know, and he loves. They love him. They take. You know, they're so good with him, And I said, okay, the kids in his town will be his family. They will not be the kids in the church. They're Christians. They just aren't Baptists. Most of them in my town.
Yeah.
Change it. It's going to change for the kids down the road.
Yeah.
I mean, I teach teachers occasionally, and mm-hmm. so I advocate all the way for inclusive education and talk about my experiences all the time. So I'm kind of trying to make the next generation of teachers.
But isn't that a whole other way to advocate for?
Well, advocating the next generation.
You know, but if we can maybe work with the people at Berman, I'm not sure how much pull you have there as far as
well, not much. I'm not. I was just out of the English department into the education department for a couple of years, though I've told the current person who's teaching me methods of art, because everybody's special needs in art practically. I mean, every time I teach art or taught it, there was somebody who came in and said, I can draw nothing but stick people. That's admitting to a learning disability in my field.
Yeah. Can I just ask the people at the back, are you comfortable? Can you hear? Is it better now if I stand up? I realize that some have come in later, and we started with a small group. Are you comfortable at the back?
Yes.
Okay. And can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Excellent. Okay. I'll just stand up so maybe you can see me a little better. So that kind of is a little bit of a small wedge of advocacy. My recommendations are to persist, always be pleasant. Sometimes advocacy is very, very difficult, but tell your story. That has become my window into the world for my children, is to keep telling their story. Tell it to everybody who will listen. Introduce them, and I'm going to have another story about that a little bit later, but introduce them to people every chance you get. Invite people into your home that can connect with your child with disabilities. It's important to do that kind of thing. In advocacy, there are some key transitions in the life of a person who has disabilities. School is a huge transition, and there are several transitions throughout school that you go through as you advocate for a person with a disability. Into kindergarten is a big one, because everything changes around the household routine when a child starts kindergarten. And you have to choose the kindergarten, set it up for success, because you have to find, you know, you have to know that you're going to connect with the teacher who's going to be working with your child. So there's lots of big, for me, they were big hurdles, because I was taking my child that was with me all day to a school and leaving them for a period of time. I cried every time September 1 came around until they were in grade 6. First day of school was always tough. But there, the key transition is into kindergarten, into junior high, and then again into high school, because you are always coming to a new administration, new teachers, a new situation, and you need. What I would always do is make a package of information about my children so that I could present them with as much information about them as possible, so that they would have, you know, what he liked, you know, what works in certain areas, what doesn't work in certain areas, routines and things. So I would give them as much information as I could about them to help those transitions be a little smoother. But the biggest transition of all is into adulthood. And we have, my guys are 26 and 24, and we have done a lot of advocacy in transition to adulthood. So the bus comes, or used to come, pick up my guys and take them to school, and their day was full. They had a morning routine, they had a purpose through the morning, they had somewhere to go, and then one day that bus quits coming. And then what are they going to do for that whole day? And how are they going to interact with time and space and people? Ben was the first to go through that transition into adulthood. And in the fall, those continuing ed books come to the house, and I am flipping through this book, and I am thinking of Ben. I'm going, maybe I could sign him and put him in a continuing ed class. I could find some place for him to go and something for him to do. In that book, I flipped, and there was an outdoor photography class. One thing I know about Ben is that he likes to press buttons. And so I thought, the camera has a button. Let's see if it would work. I called the young man who was going to be leading out in the photography session and asked if Ben could join his class. He says, well, disability was a bit new to him, but he agreed to give Ben a private lesson for the same price as the group lesson. Woo! And so we met him for the first time on an October afternoon, and we are walking through the park. We used his camera and placed Ben's hand on it to show Ben where the button was, and Ben is very visual. So Ben is looking. All of a sudden we notice that Ben is looking around and looking at things, and he would lock on to his focus onto something, and then so we'd put the camera in his hand, point the camera in that direction, and let him press the button. And then we did it again in this direction, and then that direction. And it was amazing to have this connection with Ben, and he is showing us the things he likes outside. It was really fabulous. Ben has been taking pictures since then, and we're about 5 years. As I say, takes every opportunity to tell the story over and over again. We tell it to government people, we tell it to our neighbors, we tell it at church, we tell it to other photographers, we tell it to other business people. So here's what's happening with Ben today. Ben, we have learned some things that Ben likes, because we have paid more attention to what he's looking at. So it's his way of letting us know what he likes. He likes vintage vehicles. He likes steering wheels and cars and bridges and certain things. And so in St. Albert, they have, in August, they have this biggest car show in Alberta. They used to say biggest in Western Canada. I don't know if somebody's outdone them, but between 600 and 800 cars show up in St. Albert for this week. There are 3 pancake breakfasts in a row. We go to every one of them. There's pancakes and there's cars, and there is joy because those things make Ben very happy. And so one time there was this fellow standing beside his car, and Ben is looking at it. He's taking a picture of the wheel or the doorknob or something. And so I asked him, could Ben sit in your car? Had another opportunity to tell Ben's story. And so the door opened. An open door is an invitation. And so Ben sat in that car like he owned it. And the smile on his face, and the joy that he was experiencing, that I enjoyed watching him experience. And so we are revving up to Rock in August, and so for every Tuesday leading up to it, there's a car show in a parking lot in St. Albert. There's one tonight. So when I'm done here, I'm heading home to help Ben get to that car show, because we met Blaine last week, who owns an orange car. I don't even know what this car is, but when you turn the key and the engine goes, and it makes this big noise, and it brings a smile to Ben's face, and he's offered Ben a ride. So he'll be riding, because he sat in Blaine's car last week. And last week, for the first time, I didn't ask somebody, can Ben sit in your car? People offered. So this one man with this bumblebee Camaro just opened the door and said, Ben sat in my car 4 years ago. Would he like to today? Yes, he would. And so, we are so careful about everything so that we make it a good experience for them and a good experience for us. And again, it's our chance to tell the story. It's a chance. Didn't I say my guys had a purpose in life? Ben has this great smile, and he shares it. It's really what he has to offer. And he can give that to somebody else and give them the joy of sharing their vehicle. And I am so amazed in my life that to this date, nobody has said no. And we have sat in some pretty expensive vehicles. Yeah, that's cool. That's Ben. So we are talking about transitions. We are talking about school and the transition to adulthood. That's where we are on the timesheet. And I've got a little bit ahead of myself, but I love to tell stories. Major changes in a family, health, housing, there are things that come up that dealing with the problem and as well disability is a challenge. And that's another part of advocacy. You as a parent see what your child needs to get through some of these challenges. Ben got sick, spent 2 weeks in the hospital, and while we were there, Ben stopped walking. He was not able to walk for a period of about 3 weeks. It's very scary as a parent to see the mobility that your child had suddenly completely disappear. Did my best to advocate, and it didn't lead to anywhere. I suppose I could have knocked on a few doors and said, I need some extra help. I would like to have a physiotherapist come and help Ben to regain his ability to walk. But I think I just kind of dug in my heels and said, that's okay. We can handle it. And so we took Ben from the hospital, whose general health was good, but we took him straight to a swimming pool and plunked him in the water and started moving his legs and doing everything that we could to get Ben to get his legs moving again. And he is quite mobile again at this day. I think I just took on the challenge. Mama Bear. Mama Bear. And so I could have made a call to Dr. Keith Golden, I'm sure, who would have gotten on to some things and might have gotten us some help, but that was okay. We were fine. How a family decides how they're going to handle those challenges that come in life, again, are kind of based on your values and where can you go to get the help you need, or are you going to just tackle this yourselves? Does anybody have any questions on transitions or advocacy for me? All right, let's...
You skipped a stage that we went through. You talked about a big step going into kindergarten.
Yes.
Many children may benefit from early intervention. Our child went to school 4 years before kindergarten.
Yeah.
So people with a special needs children may want to be looking at early intervention services.
But Aspire Excellent. In Red Deer is a kind of a unique program. That's a special needs early intervention program. And so Christopher went when he was three, and we're, you know, like, sending our child for 2 hours away from us at three. But he loved, I mean, seriously, we'd taken him a couple of times before to play there, and he never looked back. It's just like, ooh, toys. And
but with yeah. tough what funding parents? Available, but
you are right. Thank
at
you.
Three on, your transition may come at three and not at five or something.
You are right.
So, family support for children with disabilities, if you want to fight the government for therapists, for individual private therapy. You can. We've managed to wring the maximum amount out of them 5.5 years.
Good for you.
But it's a matter of fight. You have to sit there in their offices and tell them, I'm going to waste your time until you give me what I'm asking for. You will not save money by not giving me what I ask for, because I will take it out of the people who have to listen to me ask. So you might as well just send me the therapists. Going to cost you one way or the other.
And so when you come to this, being prepared for your ask is very important. You need to know what you're asking for, what hours, dollars, and be very particular.
They want to hear, because it doesn't matter what you need and it doesn't matter what you want. You have to tell them what they want to hear. And what they wanted to hear was you needed an integrated team to teach the parents how to be therapists. And it didn't matter what you actually planned to do, that was what you had to tell them you were doing. And most of the therapists were kind of like, oh yeah, well, we'll do what the kid needs, but don't tell FSCD. So, yeah.
And that is true. I'm sorry, looking back at this, I did miss that key point, but it's been a long time since my guys had early intervention. And for me, it came easily. I was, you know, this is an early, it rolled into early intervention. I had help to get there. But the kindergarten was, for me, a big step into into kindergarten, because there was more that I had to do to prepare kindergarten for Ben.
Well, and if you have a diagnosis, it's much easier to get those things. For a long time, we didn't have a name to give the diagnosis, yeah. And they'd never heard of what Christopher had. He was the only one in Alberta who had it.
Yeah.
So it was hard for them to get them to, you know, take a chance on him with therapy.
Yes. Excellent. Thank you for that. I've told you a little bit about Ben's story and the development of his photography. I'd like you to tell you maybe now a little bit about Grant. Grant is younger than Ben a couple of years, and what he does is art. I brought a couple of pieces of his art, and I've just displayed it over here. He paints with acrylics, canvas. And his story began in junior high, as I was kind of, I had a staff person who had another part-time job at the Art Gallery of Alberta, and I decided to capitalize on her skill. And I knew that Grant liked markers, tempera paints, papers, scissors, so I knew that he liked that kind of thing. And so I went out and bought some of these more grown-up, adult, mature materials as he was coming into that age, and it was, you know, a transition of materials. And they did some painting together, and he's been painting ever since. But how do you get to that kind of point? And this is what I want to share with you, this wheel. I call it an interest wheel. And what we did for my guys, even from when they were very young, is take this wheel, and we would fill each wedge of the wheel. There are 16 of them. And each wedge of the wheel, you would write something that they liked, that they were good at, or that they were interested in. And it can be places, objects, food in as well. It can be just anything that they liked or had an interest in or even had a little bit of a skill in. And so we did this for both of the boys, and it's because of this list that we were able to grow some of these things that they have and like in adulthood. On Ben's wheel, he's a switch flicker, anything cause and effect, likes to press buttons. So my aha moment came when I said, a camera has a button. Maybe he will push the button on the camera. And so for Grant, the paint was something that he liked, and he does like to paint. And I will tell you, the paint is everywhere when he paints, and it sure is some on the canvas too. He needs a bath when he's done, and we need to be very careful about, you know, the space that he paints in. But this kind of thing, things that were on Grant's interest wheel was floating. You know, we would get to the swimming pool, and they would have those floaty things. This is Grant's interest wheel filled out. They would have those floating things on the water. And so in here, it says whitewater rafting. But we got to whitewater rafting because we saw that Grant liked to float. He would float at the swimming pool. He would get in one of those rings, and he would, you know, rock and bounce and laugh and giggle, and he liked to float. So my question was, when I looked at the wheel, if he likes this, would he like that? And so what you have is an opportunity for adventure, a chance for something to leap off of this page and try something new. And so I said to my husband, let's take the guys whitewater rafting. And we did. We called a raft group in Banff and told them, I told them what I had hoped, and I told them about my guys, and did they think that it would be possible? No problem. They just made sure that they put us in the boat with the most experienced guide, because we didn't want to flip our boat. But I got a story to add to this. So this was just awesome excitement for Grant. Ben tolerated it. Ben would rather be in the water than in the raft. and the first rafting trip we took us through some class 3 rapids. The water was splashing in the boat and coming in all directions and moving fast, and Grant was, and we put him at the front of the boat because, and he just had the best time ever. We took him on another trip, on a float trip, and it had a stop where they would take a hike to a waterfall, and the whole time that he was out of the boat, he complained loudly till he got back in the boat. But it was part of what the trip excursion included. Ben would rather be in the water, so we got to this smoother place, no more rapids, the water was deep enough, and the guide said anybody who would like to jump in would be welcome. And my job was to hang on to Ben and keep him in the boat. So I just let go of Ben. And in he went into the water. And he had the biggest smile, and he's laughing and kicking. Well, anywhere Ben goes, I go. That water was cold, because it was like a degree short of an ice cube. But it was adventure. And our family had a wonderful thing. But, you know, it's calculated risk. Life is lived in risk. And people with disabilities need to have some sense of calculated risk in their life. Because it's good for them. It's good for us too. It's part of the joy that we can experience in our families when we take those opportunities. So, any questions on the interest wheel? An interest wheel can also do something else very nice for a person, for, you know, the family to have input. And you can ask siblings to have input, parents, grandparents, friends. Maybe they will notice something that you didn't notice about what they might like or something. So get some input into your interest wheel. A couple of things can happen. First of all, you can buy a present for a person with a disability if you know what their interests and likes are. And you'll get some interesting presents. Next, you can also match them with a person who has a similar like or interest, and now you can have peer-to-peer interaction because you've put two people together, but you've put something in between them that they both like, even if it's just cheesies. Ben loves cheesies. And it's great to invite a friend over whom he also knows likes cheesies, and they can share a bowl of cheesies, and there's friendship because you have put something in between them that they both enjoy. So it's a nice way to match interests and friendships. Okay, let's check to see where we are in the outline. I have spread out my papers and lost my outline to underneath this paper here. Okay, so that is the interest wheel. Person-centered planning is what we've also done with our boys, and it's about taking those interests and likes. Thank you. I just had a 5-minute marker, so I'm just letting the microphone know where I'm at too. And we kind of have a one-page profile because people will come in to work with our guys, and we want to give them as much information about Ben and Grant as possible. So we kind of do this person-centered planning as an introduction to Ben and Grant. And on my page here are the lists of questions that are in this profile. What do people admire about me? So what do people admire about Ben? What is important to Ben? What does Ben like? That's just your interest wheel again. Your interest wheel is just a list of that. I like to do it in the wheel because it forces you to think. When a person has a disability, sometimes you limit yourself to say they only like 1, 2, 3, 4 things because they seem to do those same 4 things over and over again. But if you put so many wedges on that wheel, it forces you to think of other things. So the first time we did the guy's wheel, I think we had food and 4 of them in order to fill the whole wheel. How can you best support Ben? What is important to Ben? What are my dreams for the future? Ben is going to be riding in the parade for Rockin' August, so we went and knocked on the door at Fountain Tire and I introduced, told Ben's story to the owner of Fountain Tire, and before I even could ask, he said, "Would Ben like to ride in the parade?" I went, "What? That was my ask. That's why I came here." I was so excited. The man was so kind. He was just really awesome. So do our individuals dream, and sometimes do we have to advocate or speak up on their behalf for their dreams? Yes, we do. What is a good or a bad day? What's that like? That's also in their file. And what are their hopes and fears? Grant is afraid of the dark. He has a tough time falling asleep because he doesn't like being in a dark room. We found out at Disneyland. We went into the ride of the Pirates of the Caribbean, and before you get into it, it becomes very dark. And here's my kid having a meltdown. And then it gets dark again, and there's another meltdown. And sometimes it's really hard to figure things out. But we got home to our hotel. We put the lights out, and Grant had another meltdown. So my husband got up, flicked the switch on in the bathroom. He saw light. And went, rolled over and went to sleep. And we were just amazed. He's afraid of the dark. Who knew? And so we put a dimmer switch in his room. The minute we got home, my husband went to Home Depot to get a dimmer switch. And so he can dim the lights in his room and make it a little easier for him to fall asleep. So I would like to, 5 minutes is probably done. You can look up Autism Artistry. That is what my guys do. They sell their works. They are doing the art walk in St. Albert. There's an invitation for you to come to that. I didn't get to support, but I have this little booklet here of 7 things disabled kids would like you to do, and it's pretty basic. So I'm just going to read you the titles. Accept me for who I am. Be a friend. Talk to me as you would any other person. No baby talk. My men are 26 and 24, and I still hear it in sometimes the way that people relate to them. Let me try to do my best, and they really do their best. Don't always have to be redoing what their best offer is. Celebrate it, and don't step in there to redo it. Don't feel sorry for me. They have their gifts and skills. Just quick, I have to tell you, we weren't going to have Grant volunteer for the Children's Festival in St. Albert. He had caused some trouble last year. He was riding the bus, and there were too many kids, and it was too much for the staff. So we said we weren't going to put him in. So I'm on the phone getting Ben set up to volunteer at the Children's Festival. I said, we're going to keep Grant out this year. Grant has 2 skills. He's got a great handshake and a smile, and I don't know that you would have anything for that at the festival. So, and this young lady on the other end of the phone said, leave it with me. And the next day she called back. They said, we've been trying to do something to let the volunteers know that we appreciate them. Could Grant do volunteer appreciation? They made a bag of candy, and Grant went in with his staff into a event tent when the children had left. Grant likes children. He'd like to dismantle them. He scares them because he comes at them too fast. Especially the very young children. So there were no children in the tent, just other adults who had just finished their shift, and he would give them a smile and a handshake and a candy. I'd come along after Grant had been in that tent, and I'd come along with Ben to do some photography, and I got the whole story of what Grant had just done for those volunteers in that tent. They just loved having Grant do volunteer appreciation. They found a job for him using his best 2 skills. So, be patient when I mess up is number 6, because sometimes messes do happen, and we need to be patient with that. And know that I love God and that He loves me. Thank you, folks, yes, so much for coming out to this talk today. It's always a joy to share my story about Ben and Grant. Thank you very much.
Thank you
for having me. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing. And would you entertain questions afterwards?
Yes, I will. I'm good here till about 4 o'clock today, okay. So I would be happy to talk to anybody after.
We're going to be a seminar happening here at 4 o'clock. So you know we can stay in and enjoy each other's company and ask questions. But there will be people coming in, so the official part's over, but.
I'll be around for a little bit.
Okay. And get a drink if you want.
I'm so proud of you. Thank you.
I see your seminar there. I should have you come.
Thank you.
No technology needed. Thank you for coming.
You have to choose
where you're going to
work.
Yes, I can Sunday. What do you mean, like the Jesuits have the Jewish people?
4,000 practices.
Every single other Christian denomination.
It took Graf 3 years to sort the country, but he had a job to do.
Yeah, I think that would be a great idea.
You're very welcome. Ladies come from far away to be here. He used to be in BC. I thought he was coming, but he had to go fight.
Over the week, we've got to challenge yours, but last year we had quite good scenes, you know, so I kind of I was able to copy more of it.